Did you get a selfie?
You know, I thought about that. I did not get a selfie.
You could have been the 50,000th selfie that she's taken on her campaign, dude.
Talk about controlling big data. Break up the Elizabeth Warren selfie machine.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to GeekWire. I'm GeekWire editor Todd Bishop.
I'm GeekWire managing editor Taylor Soper.
And I'm Kurt Schlosser, Geek Life reporter.
Later on, we're going to be talking about Amazon's Ring doorbell company and a fascinating issue that's come up with its collaboration with law enforcement agencies around the country. Kurt and I are going to have to debate this one because I'm a Ring owner and I kind of like it. It makes me feel secure, but
I'm never coming to your front door.
Exactly. And we're going to explain why coming up later on. Plus, last week we talked about the new Bill Gates docuseries from Netflix. This week we've got an actual teaser, a trailer. We're going to play part of it for you and talk about what it says about how this new Netflix series is going to sound and look. And it looks pretty cool. So stick around for that. But first, I want to talk about my weekend.
Todd, I'm interested in hearing about your weekend, too, because last I saw you on Friday, you told me you were batching it.
Yes, my family was out of town. So, of course, that means that I look for every opportunity to do some journalism,
Kirk.
To work. So Elizabeth Warren, the Democratic presidential candidate, was in town on Sunday afternoon. And this was like very interesting to me because of the context here. A lot of folks out there may know that Elizabeth Warren proposed several months ago to basically break up big tech companies, to split up and undo some of the mergers that Facebook and Google and Amazon have done. And in the case of Amazon specifically, she proposed to separate Amazon's first-party online sales from its third-party marketplace. She cites a conflict of interest there between Amazon's own sales and the services that it provides to these other retailers and the intel that it gets in the process. And so here she is appearing at Seattle Center at a campaign stop. This is going to be high drama. It's like, what? How far is Seattle Center from the Amazon campus?
Maybe three blocks.
Yeah, it's definitely walking distance. And clearly, this was a moment where she could stand up and take the company on right in its backyard. So let's take a listen to what it sounded like.
Hello, Seattle! Oh, wow. I'm so glad to be here. I thought what we'd do today is I tell you a little bit about myself, a little bit about why I'm in this race. We'll do some questions. I think we've already drawn some questioners. Oh, I got one right there. Okay. And then for anybody who wants to, I'll stay as long as you want. We'll take selfies. Good. That's the fun part. So
now, when she said that about the selfies, I got to say, I was like, there's no way. This was a crowd that was estimated at 15,000 people. There is no way she is truly serious about taking a selfie with every person in that crowd. I was totally wrong.
Whoa. She totally stood there for the duration to get a selfie with everybody?
Yes. And we'll get into that in just a minute because it impacted the rest of my day in ways that I did not expect. All right. So this was as close as she got during her speech to alluding to Amazon.
The problem we've got is the giant corporations have just gotten bigger and they have so much power. They have swallowed up the little businesses and the medium-sized businesses. Shoot, they've swallowed up what used to be called the big businesses. Swallowed them up, and then they've got the power. The power to run over their own employees. The power, it's true, to run over their own consumers. The power to run over the communities where they're located. They've got the power in Washington. So what are we going to do? What are we going to do about this? Well, the first one is, how about we get a president who's got the courage to enforce the antitrust laws? I'm in on that.
There was one other reference to Amazon specifically, but it was more about comparing the company's fulfillment centers, their warehouses, to federal detention centers. I didn't quite understand if she was purposely trying to dig at them, but at any rate, that was the only explicit reference to Amazon in the talk, which surprised me. This to me was like proposing to break up Ford, then going to Detroit for a campaign speech and not mentioning it, essentially.
Yeah, I mean, you can tell who she's talking about in there. Why not say the name? What do you think was the reasoning there?
You know, I'm not sure, but I did talk with a CNN journalist who covers Elizabeth Warren's campaign, and she said that essentially it was her standard stump speech, that this was just essentially what Senator Warren says at every stop that she makes. So I don't know if it was purposeful or not, but I think there's probably a tendency for candidates just to get in the, hey, this is what I say mode, and perhaps not think creatively about the context. And that's what I pointed out to her campaign staff. And I said, hey, look, I'd love to give her a chance to address this. And to their credit, her communications team said, okay, just a second, be right back. And then they came back and said, here's the deal. If you can stay here until the bitter end, until this entire event is over, you can have a couple questions with her. And I went, fantastic. So I sat there and, you know, what's it going to be? Maybe half hour, 45 minutes, an hour. And then I looked at the line and it went all the way around the ellipsis there at the Seattle Center next to the International Fountain near the Space Needle. And I was thinking, okay, 2 hours, 2 hours, 4.5 hours later, she finally finished taking a selfie with every single person who wanted it in that crowd.
And I wonder if they were going to drive this guy away. He'll never stick around.
No, that would be a totally self-centered thing to think. But no, I think, well, this is part of her campaign approach. And I think it's brilliant from a social media perspective and amazing in terms of stamina to be able to stand up there for 4 hours. And she was extremely energetic all the way to the end, as I witnessed firsthand when I got a chance to talk with her. So here's what that sounded like.
I'm Todd Bishop from GeekWire.
Hi.
We're just a few blocks here from Amazon.
Yep.
What's your message to employees of the tech company Amazon and other tech companies that might worry about and the impact of some of your policies on their jobs, their companies, and U.S. innovation?
Breaking up big tech does not mean fewer jobs. There's still the work that has to be done. But it does mean that we've got to have a fairer marketplace. You know, look, Amazon, for example, they run this marketplace that's now 49% of online sales. And at the same time, they go compete on businesses. And they're collecting all the information from running the platform and then taking advantage of that information to nudge out other small businesses. That doesn't help competition and it doesn't help jobs. So the way I see this is break those two things apart. Let the platform be one business. You know, it's kind of like in baseball. You can be the umpire or you can own one of the teams, but you don't get to be the umpire and own the teams. So let's pull those two things apart, keep the platform going, and let Amazon run as many businesses as they want, but not with the advantage of having sucked all the information out from the platform. So that's what's key for me.
Last question.
Yeah, we are just a few very close here. Uh-huh. I was surprised you didn't address that specifically. What would be your message for Jeff Bezos and Amazon today?
I think it's time to break them up, enforce the antitrust laws, and we've got to look at the antitrust laws in terms of the world we have today. This online platform really creates an opportunity that Amazon has taken advantage of, and it's hurt a lot of little tiny businesses and startup businesses and small businesses and medium-sized businesses that can't compete with a giant like Amazon that is sucking information out of every transaction. Information is today's comparative advantage, and Amazon shouldn't be able to suck it all up and then dominate every single marketplace in America.
Did you think about being more specific in going after them today here in their backyard?
Not particularly.
Yeah.
I mean, I was here to talk about why I'm running for president, and
Yeah. You
bet. I mean, I at least had the passing reference to the fact that we got to break up the big companies. We've got to enforce our antitrust laws, but a lot of stuff we've got to do.
Thank you.
Wow, Todd, you are indignant.
Are you serious?
No, man, I would have loved to have had that dialogue in her actual speech. And I get what you were going for there. It's like, go ahead and say it. You're right here. Call them out. Use their name. Use Bezos's name. And I wonder what that would have done to the applause factor. And it would have been interesting to hear that.
If for nothing more than the reaction. And that was the thing. A lot of what she said was reiterating things she said elsewhere. But I think setting and context are extremely important, especially in today's political climate. People are listening for signals, and I think the signal back from the crowd would have been fascinating. I don't know if it would have been boos or cheers, but the sheer number of tech workers that were in the crowd, Amazon employees in the crowd, it was, I think, a little bit of a missed opportunity. Now, let me say, I was extremely grateful to them for giving me a few minutes with her to ask those questions, and also extremely impressed. What candidate would stand there for 4 hours, more than 4 hours, taking selfies with everybody in the crowd who wanted one? And frankly, not only was it impressive, but it was a brilliant social media strategy because every one of those thousands of people, and by the way, she took her 50,000th selfie of the campaign during that Seattle stint. So yeah, lots of impressive stuff there. And I'm glad I got a chance to ask the questions.
You know, maybe the fact that she didn't get into this big tech thing is maybe because voters just don't really care about it as much as we do as tech industry insiders. Do people even care? You know?
I think that's a good point. You could take this as a litmus test for her recognition of the voters' appetite for this issue in general. And the fact that she only makes a passing reference to it in her standard stump speech, I think, is telling. And perhaps after floating this whole proposal, they realized, based on the reaction, that it wasn't the kind of thing that really fired up any crowd.
Yeah, I wonder how many selfie takers stood there and said, hey, you've got my vote, but don't mess with my one-day shipping.
Yeah. All right. So that was my weekend adventure. Fortunately, my family is back in town. So
did you get a selfie?
I did not. That was, you know, I thought about that. I did not get a selfie.
You could have been the 50,000th selfie that she's taken on her campaign, dude.
Talk about controlling big data. Break up the Elizabeth Warren selfie machine.
That's a good point.
No, it was a lot of fun, but I truly did regret it as I walked away because that would have been the perfect ending to the entire anecdote if I got my own selfie with her. By the way, I got to say, this is a small nit, but they aren't really selfies. Somebody hands their phone to her staffer. Oh. The staffer takes the picture. Yeah. It's much more efficient that way, but to call them selfies is a bit of a stretch.
Sounds like you need to submit an argument to the dictionary. You know, I think selfie probably got in the dictionary a few years ago, so maybe you need to tweak the definition of what actually is a selfie.
Or maybe Elizabeth Warren just needs to say, I'll take a photo with you. Coming up on GeekWire, we'll talk about Amazon's Ring smart doorbell maker and its collaboration with police departments. Is it a public benefit or a privacy concern? That's coming up next.
I wanted a career in IT, but I didn't know where to start. WGU makes it simple. Their accredited online degree programs cover all kinds of IT specialties, and they have valuable industry certifications built in at no extra cost. The payoff? Having those certs back up my degree makes me look even better to future employers. A nonprofit university that includes top industry certs in their programs? I choose WGU. Learn more at wgu.edu/IT certs included.
Welcome back to GeekWire. It's Todd Bishop with Kurt Schlosser and Taylor Soper. Kurt, you covered the story this week following up on a Washington Post report about Ring, which is the smart doorbell maker that Amazon acquired a couple of years ago now for a reported $1 billion. I'm a Ring customer. The gist of this story is they are doing partnerships with law enforcement, which we knew about to some extent, but I don't think we knew the scope of it.
Yeah, the Post says that they're the first to report on this number. More than 400 police agencies across the U.S., most heavily concentrated on the East Coast. There's only one in Washington State that this new interactive map that they've created will show you.
So what does this collaboration entail? Do the police like have access to the cameras at will? Because I could see where that would be a huge privacy concern.
No, police do not have unfettered access to your videos. There is what's called the Neighbors app, which is a sort of this social platform for people who do use Ring. And you can share your videos publicly. You can discuss crime and safety concerns in your neighborhood. You can say, has anyone seen my cat? And, you know, everything you can imagine that those doorbell cameras would pick up. The way the police come in is through a part of that app that's called the Neighbors Portal. And police will reach out to Ring specifically. They'll request video from an area where they think there has been some nefarious activity. And Ring, in turn, will send a notification to users in that area saying, hey, if you want to submit something like this to your local law enforcement agency that's participating in this program, click on this and this, and then then your video gets shared in that way. You can opt out of that. You can even opt out of those email alerts.
So effectively, it's an elective evidence participation program.
Yeah.
So this is one situation where the headline doesn't always match up with the details, because I hear the headline, oh, Ring is collaborating with 400 law enforcement agencies around the country. And I think, man, this is like Orwell in action. And the reality is it's a way for police to connect with you that's more automated, but it's as if they were just knocking on the door and saying, hey, did you see anything?
Yeah, there is still some fear about how much information those cameras are collecting. I don't know the exact layout of the one on your house, but think about the scope of what that camera shows on your street, from your front yard to the sidewalk to your driveway and beyond.
Yep.
And who might pass by through the range of that camera? Police might end up with your video to, say, try to catch a package thief. And in the scope of that video, perhaps a person walks by who has nothing to do with that crime. Or there's a car that drives by that people have been chattering about in the neighbor's app about being suspicious on your block. All of a sudden, that information starts to form this collective mindset around who are these people and why are they in our neighborhood? And you can imagine how that tends to feed into discriminatory behavior. And privacy advocates, as you just said, Orwellian, the ACLU said, Big Brother is watching right at our front doors. And that kind of resonated with me. I think about my own porch and my own probably 50-year-old doorbell that's attached to it, and all it does is ring.
No pun intended.
Not ring like that.
It rings like a sound.
Ring without
like a
video.
Yes.
And it's like, what do I want to know about what's going on my front porch or what I'm doing on my front porch that I want people to know about?
Yeah, I could see that. And to your point, Kurt, I can verify these are high resolution cameras. I can see not only my porch and my front yard and my driveway, they're wide angle. I can see the sidewalk. I can see the street. I can see the other side of the street. I mean, they're very good cameras. It's one of the reasons I like it. But at the same time, I do get the concern. I get it, especially when you talk about aggregating the data, the information from all these cameras, as these law enforcement agencies could do, even if it's voluntary. That is the one nuance. I think this would be outrageous if it wasn't voluntary,
yeah,
if it wasn't opt-in. But I agree that it is something to talk about and think about, and we have to ask ourselves, where is that trade-off?
Jamie Siminoff, the founder, wrote in a blog post on the same day as the Post story about how their intention is to create safer neighborhoods. And I felt this way after I finally gave up on that Nextdoor app. Maybe our neighborhoods are so unsafe because none of us talk to each other anymore and none of us interact with one another. We're all behind our computers and our cameras chattering about what we think we saw in the neighborhood or what we're afraid we're going to see. So, I mean, that may be a very 1950s mentality, but I feel safest in my neighborhood when I actually talk to my neighbors face-to-face.
I agree with you. Yep, totally.
What if this was just the government and the police working, and the government had their own cameras and they're supplying the cameras? I think the fact that it's Amazon is this like third leg where Amazon's getting involved in this, private business is involved and they're teaming up with the police, and it creates this kind of a weird feeling. I feel like that, like, Amazon has my data now. They have my shopping data. Now they have my security data. And you start to see that meeting 5 years ago with Jeff Bezos and his S team, like, hey, we should acquire a Ring. You know, they paid $1 billion. Bill Gates said PC on every desk, you know, a Ring on every house. And you can start to see where, is everyone going to have to have a Ring doorbell camera on their front door? From a business perspective, it makes, like, this is a huge opportunity for Amazon. But then there's all this privacy implications. So it's just really interesting when you look at Amazon, how Amazon fits into all this.
Absolutely. And not only that, but Amazon Web Services and the recognition technology. Amazon has been also working with law enforcement agencies there. So what if these same law enforcement agencies are applying the facial recognition technology to the video that they're separately getting from Amazon's Ring subsidiary? That's interesting. And then add Alexa to it. There was fascinating coverage over the past few months about Google and Google Assistant and Apple and Siri and Amazon and Alexa, about how they use human reviewers to listen to a selection of audio clips from users of their smart speakers and other devices that use those voice assistants. And those contractors in those cases ended up with some, in some cases, really salacious audio of private moments. And in response to that, each of these companies either suspended or revised their policies. And the latest news on that front was that Apple changed from an opt-out to an opt-in. In other words, you have to consciously opt in to this program to have your audio clips reviewed by humans for quality purposes. That's why they say they're doing it. They say they're doing it to make sure that Siri and Alexa and Google Assistant are responding appropriately to whatever commands you give, and that this is just kind of a side effect in terms of the privacy implications.
It's like Ring saying, hey, we're just doing this to make your neighborhood safer.
Yep.
Oh, yeah, that does sound good. But then you start to hear the privacy advocates and people like even Elizabeth Warren is like, hold on, like, let's not give one company too much power, basically. When Amazon did buy Ring, I didn't even like – you know, think about this like, oh, is this what's going to happen? But now it's really interesting to see how their acquisition of this makes a lot of sense. So we'll see where it goes from here.
So, Kurt, I can get you a ring for Christmas?
Yeah, please do. Why don't you deliver in person?
Well, can we always come back to you beating somebody up on the podcast?
That was not my intention. I won't see you coming. I'll answer the door and I'll say hello.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay, I misread it. It was the look on your face.
That's good. I like to keep you scared, though.
All right, coming up next, it's the Random Channel. You're listening to GeekWire. Hey, welcome back. It is time for the Random Channel, that moment of the week when we talk about the random items we were buzzing about behind the scenes at GeekWire. I want to start this week because last week, Kurt, you took my Random Channel item.
Oh, man. Go ahead.
All right. So I'm going to take it this time. And this is actually a follow-up to a random item that we talked about last week. And that is Netflix is coming out with a documentary about Bill Gates called Inside Bill's Brain. And this week we got the teaser, the trailer. So let's listen to what it sounds like.
Bill Gates. What's your favorite animal?
Dog.
What's your favorite food?
Hamburger.
What do you eat for breakfast?
Nothing.
What is your worst fear?
I don't want my brain to stop working.
Bill is a multiprocessor. He'll be reading something else, but then processing at the same time. It's chaos.
He thrives on complexity. He makes a framework in his mind, and then he starts slotting in the information.
If something doesn't line up, he gets really frustrated. It's scary.
But when Bill stills himself, he can pull ideas together that other people can't see.
I'm hooked. Like, I'm naturally inclined to watch a documentary on Bill Gates, but I would watch this documentary if it was about anybody. I'm totally hooked. So it debuts September 20th. The interesting thing was I recognized some of the other voices. I think you heard there Melinda Gates, but later on, they don't identify him, but Nathan Myhrvold is in this documentary.
Oh.
And there's also some other insiders that I heard.
Yeah, and Nathan is Bill's former colleague at Microsoft.
Right. So Nathan Myhrvold is Microsoft's former CTO who went on to much criticism as a patent collector. That's probably the most benign way you could put it. But yeah, Nathan Myhrvold, polymath, modernist cuisine. There's literally nothing Nathan doesn't do, but he and Bill Gates still are in touch, and it's been fascinating to see their partnership continue.
There's some cool footage in that trailer alone. It shows Bill and Melinda kayaking.
I spotted that too. Yeah. Yeah. You know, I'm pretty sure that was on Hood Canal.
Bill said he doesn't eat breakfast, which caught me off guard.
Yeah.
Maybe we all should stop eating breakfast.
I don't know.
Be as smart as Bill.
I thought that breakfast was the most important meal of the day.
Not so smart, are you, Bill?
Maybe we're not so smart.
Oh, good point.
Well, to me, I've been waiting for the Bill Gates biography, the Bill Gates autobiography. There's been lots of biographies, but he's never written himself the story of his life. I don't know if you know this, but several years ago, through what was then known as BGC3 and is now Gates Ventures, they hired a former Wall Street Journal reporter, Rob Guth. And I've run into Rob at a variety of events, and I've asked him a couple times, so are you writing the book? Is that what you're doing? You're like writing the autobiography with him? And Rob would never say, and every time I bring it up around the team, it's always very, you kind of get that smile, that knowing grin. So I wonder if this is the prelude to the autobiography. I don't know. One way or another, Bill Gates has got to write his autobiography someday, right?
Yeah, you would think. Do you think it would be all five spots on his summer beach read, his own book?
No, that was nice. When Melinda wrote her book, he basically used it as a bonus in his beach read list. Of course, you've got to read Melinda's book. All right. So that's my random channel item. Thanks for letting me take that one this week, Kurt.
That's a good one. And I wrote that story. So thank you for randomizing my story. I have a pretty fun one from earlier in the week. And what would you say your favorite song is? Can you name one off the top of your head?
Probably Changes by Tupac.
Changes by Tupac.
Yeah. Have you heard that one?
No.
I'll Slack it to you.
Okay.
Okay.
Todd?
You know, I like Angie by the Rolling Stones. And the reason that's top of mind is there's a great YouTube series, something like Why That Song Is So Great or something. And they featured it. And so one of my buddies passed that along to me.
Well, you know, music is subjective, but you're both wrong. The most iconic song ever, according to at least one computer scientist's software analysis, is a homegrown favorite by the name of Smells Like Teen Spirit.
Oh my gosh, Nirvana.
Yeah, so that Nirvana hit, it made its radio debut 28 years ago this week, which was timely for this report out of London that crunched together a bunch of things such as key, number of beats per minute, chord variety, lyrical content, sonic variants, to come up with a list of the top 50 most iconic songs ever. And the list to create that was generated from those sort of popular lists that are in magazines like Rolling Stone and so forth. And so this researcher, Dr. Mick Grierson, found that Smells Like Teen Spirit, that grunge hit from the 90s, was our most iconic song ever.
So not only in a qualitative way, but based on like the algorithms, Smells Like Teen Spirit was destined to be a hit, basically.
Yeah. Now, I'm sure Kurt Cobain would have loved that type of analysis.
I'm sure.
You had one more random item, I thought. You had a fun bike ride last night.
Yeah, I'll keep it here in Seattle. Marshawn Lynch, another iconic figure from our past who has since moved back to Oakland, was in town last night. You know, Marshawn, Beast Mode, as we lovingly refer to him, has gone on to create his own brand. He had a brand when he was here, obviously, but he has these Beast Mode shops. And one of the things he sells at these shops are these branded bicycles by a bike manufacturer called SC Bikes. And what they make are these very niche BMX bikes that have large tires and colorful frames, and they're very much a cult following for people who are into bikes. And they had a Seattle ride out this week that started at the Space Needle, and sure enough, Marshawn Lynch showed up on his own Money Lynch brand of this bike, and it was a scene. I took my 12-year-old son down there on his BMX bike. I borrowed my brother's own version of one of these SE bikes called a Big Ripper, and we rode around downtown Seattle for 2 hours.
Wow.
200 people getting as close as they want to Marshawn, trying not to take selfies. He was definitely not into that. I saw him admonish a couple of people who tried. I took
like on their bikes.
Yeah, like you walk up to him and do like flip the camera and be like, Marshawn, go. And he, you know,
he's no Elizabeth Warren.
He might as well have been at a Super Bowl press conference, because he was just like, he was like, no, don't do that. So it was cool. It felt like Seattle in its sort of Seahawks heyday of when he was here, and he was the biggest thing in town as far as a character on that team. You know, there are certainly a couple others who have since come and gone, but it was fun, and it stopped a little bit of traffic, created a lot of looky-loos on the sidewalk around Pike Place Market and down by the waterfront, and I got to say that was the highlight of my summer.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Taylor, don't tell me you're going to talk about chicken sandwiches again.
I got to bring it back to chicken again. I'm sorry.
Man, you are hungry. You should have had breakfast, Bill.
I'm hungry. Well, I'm doing the Bill Gates diet now. No, you know, last week, if you tuned in, I talked about the new chicken sandwich from Popeyes, which took over the internet last week, and still people are talking about it. They actually sold out of this new chicken sandwich. That was the latest news in this saga or story. So they actually told people to download their app to find out when they'll be back on the market, which I thought was pretty smart. You know, get some app downloads from your viral sensation. So that's the latest on the chicken beat. There was also a
the chicken beat.
Wait, what about the part where their employees are supposedly working like 30 hours of overtime to try and meet demand?
The story under the story, I guess, was that, hey, these chicken sandwiches are so awesome, but there have been some interesting tales told about how excruciating the work was to meet the demand. And that New York Times had a great piece this week, 15 Minutes to Mayhem, How a Tweet Led to a Shortage at Popeyes. And so it kind of gets into like how a marketing decision led to this viral sensation, and then also what happened inside the store. So it's been It's such a ridiculous story. And the other wrinkle to it was that there's Popeyes, there's Chick-fil-A, and KFC has entered the ring into this discussion with not chicken, but Beyond Fried Chicken. So KFC came out. While this is all going on, they were prepping their own big debut. They debuted a plant-based chicken for the first time. And guess what? That sold out in one day. So, hey, people love real chicken, and they love fake chicken, and so that's why I'm on the chicken beat now.
Can you imagine being KFC and you're gearing up for your big meatless chicken news this summer and it gets scooped a week earlier by actual chicken news?
That would be pretty disappointing.
Brutal. Just brutal.
Also, what's the deal with you and Popeyes? I feel like I'm going to go out to your car and it's going to be loaded with Popeyes wrappers. Like you're getting just fed these by some
No,
PR.
I talk about it a lot. You know, I still haven't actually had the sandwich. I just enjoy talking about it.
I think we need, once it's back, to go record a segment in line, don't you think?
I would love that.
Yeah. All right. I do want to mention the YouTube series that I referenced earlier. It's What Makes This Song Great. It's by Rick Beato. And he, in fact, does have an episode about Nirvana. So does that make it a little more credible now?
Yes, indeed.
All right. Well, this is great. I hope everybody has a great Labor Day.
Yeah. Are you going to go cover another, are you going to stand in line again?
Or? I'm going to see, well, obviously you're going to be standing in line for chicken. I'm going to be standing in line to get that selfie with Elizabeth Warren, and you're going to be standing in line to ride bikes with Marshawn.
I would do that again.
Yeah. All right. Hey, thanks for listening, everybody. We will be back next week. Be sure to subscribe to the GeekWire podcast in your favorite podcast app and give us a rating and a review. Until next time, I'm Todd Bishop.
I'm Taylor Soper.
And I'm Kurt Schlosser.
We'll talk to you next time on GeekWire.